Now that the May 12th deadline is passed, the time is appropriate to take a look at the compensatory draft picks the Packers are likely to get next season. Lending his expertise is Nick Cordy of OverTheCap.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Kervu. We're talking Packers football this morning. We're talking about the May 12th deadline that recently passed. And to do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone today.
Expert interview.
We have Nick Cordy of OverTheCap.com. Nick, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing really good. How are you doing?
Very good. We're glad you could join us on the show once again. We had you on last year to talk after the May 12th deadline passed, and we're doing that again. And Nick, before we get into what the Packers might get in the form of compensatory draft picks, let's talk about what they won't get. Can you kind of review what the May 12th deadline means and what they won't, and that they won't get any picks for players like John Kuhn or Mike Neal or Andrew Corliss, even if they sign with another NFL team?
Well, I actually think the deadline was the last Tuesday after the draft, which is May 10th.
Okay.
But either way, this is the date. It used to be June 1st, where unrestricted free agents like Kuhn or Neal or Corliss will transition into street free agents, a designation that doesn't factor into the compensatory formula. So for teams like the Packers that focus closely on compensatory picks, it's a time where they can safely enter the low-level veteran market, which could include those former Packers that you talked about.
Can you also review why the Packers, you know, why they went out and signed notable free agents like Jared Cook and linebacker Laurenti McCray, but why they won't count in the compensatory draft pick equation?
Yeah, two different reasons. Jared Cook was cut by the Los Angeles Rams, and the Broncos declined to offer a restricted free agent tender to Laurenti McCray. Both teams had the ability to keep those players, but since they didn't, they also became designated as street free agents, not counting in the formula.
Okay, so now that we've got that out of the way, let's look at what the Packers can get this season. What is your prediction for what the Packers might get for cornerback Casey Hayward, who signed with the San Diego Chargers this offseason?
I've got Hayward as a fifth-round value right now, though he's close enough to that cutoff that it could be a sixth. Right now I've got that fifth-sixth cutoff at $5 million per year, and Hayward's deal was just above that. So it appears that Hayward is slated to be the nickelback in San Diego, so if he's able to play at least half the team's snaps, that should keep Hayward at a fifth.
That's cool. That's cool. From a Packers standpoint, I imagine they paid him all that money for a reason. It's to get on the field. So hopefully that comes to fruition. And on to quarterback Scott Tolzien, who signed with the Indianapolis Colts. What do you think the Packers will get for him?
Tolzien won't be anything higher than a seventh-round pick, and there's also a very good chance that he won't make that 32-pick limit for the compensatory picks. Now, last year, there wasn't even any seventh-rounders awarded at all due to so many higher comp picks being awarded, and that could be the case again this year. There's only three on the board right now. Right now, Tolzien is 31st on that list, and I think there could be a couple players not showing up right now that could leapfrog Tolzien after roster cuts and playing time adjustments come into play.
How much do you think playing time factors into the compensatory draft pick equation? Because as a backup quarterback, I don't anticipate Tolzien playing much at all, or, you know, I don't think the Colts do either. They'd like to have Andrew Luck out there if possible.
Well, as long as Andrew Luck stays healthy, right?
Yeah.
But yes, in the Colts' perfect world, Tolzien wouldn't play at all. He got a big enough contract that he should at least qualify for the compensatory formula, regardless of how much playing time he gets. But again, that real worry is not so much the qualification as he won't make that 32 pick limit.
What you mentioned before, and I'm kind of in the dark here, you said players might leapfrog him. Like, how would that happen?
Well, if cancellations change that free up a comp pick for a player that had been canceled out before, that would that's higher than Tolzien, that would push that down. For example, if the Seahawks cut Bradley Sewell, or he doesn't qualify for any reason, I mean, he's probably just going to be a reserve O-lineman for them, but that would open up a sixth-round pick higher up for the Seahawks, which would push all those sevenths down one spot.
Ah, I understand now. Okay, it's interesting. So we kind of have to wait a little bit yet to figure that out. What's the deadline like? Is it like week 10 or something when they like figure out who's on the roster and who's not? Do you know that off the top of your head?
Yeah, as far as cuts go, week 10 is that deadline for when players either count or don't count on that. You know, and then with snap adjustments, that may cause some players to go up or down and around, like the case with Devon House last year, or they may not even qualify for the formula. So it'll all be finalized right after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, can you elaborate on that? I don't mean to point this out to bring up something you got wrong, but last year when you joined us, you projected the Packers would get a fifth-round pick for Devon House. They ended up getting a fourth round. So what in specific kind of led to that?
Oh, no worries on that. I don't mind when I'm wrong. It helps me learn more about the formula when I do get something wrong. But two factors I think played into Devon House. The first I anticipated again was the snap count adjustment. He started in Jacksonville. But the second was a new discovery made around the same time the league made comp picks tradable. And that's when I learned that those cutoffs are based on a league-wide ranking of the players on an NFL roster at the end of the regular season. So I'm still working on refining that new discovery, probably going to take a couple years. But one aspect of that put Devon House more safely in the fourth-round range.
Well, that ended up well for the Green Bay Packers, at least. Speaking of, the Packers are tied for the second most compensatory draft picks of all time, second to only the Baltimore Ravens. Nick, do you think there's a correlation between success and getting these compensatory draft picks?
Perhaps there is. You know, there's always exceptions to the rule, but that general rule is that the more chances you have at drafting players, the more chances you have at hitting on players. In addition to the Packers and the Ravens, the other teams that focus on collecting comp picks, I would say, are the Broncos, Seahawks, 49ers, Patriots, Steelers, Bengals. You see a lot of perennial playoff contenders and Super Bowl champions in that list of teams right there.
Yeah, they do have a lot of success. Next year, you alluded to this before, next year will be the first time compensatory draft picks can be traded. Why do you think it took so long for the NFL to allow this?
No, I can't say for sure. I mean, my guess would be that when comp picks were first authorized as a compromise in introducing the free agency era, perhaps the feeling was that the compensation for the players lost should be locked into their contract value. I mean, I didn't have strong feelings about this restriction one way or the other, but I think most people are glad that they're now tradable. It's already creating some odd trade conditions already. We saw that in both of those mega trades with Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. They both involve potential comp picks for the Rams and the Browns. You know, I personally hope that they release the comp picks earlier now before free agency starts so that teams know exactly how much draft capital they have to work with on the market.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting. Nick, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. You're the man with the expertise on this subject, so I come to you. So appreciate it. And if we have any more comp pick questions, we're going to come to you, all right?
All right. Always good to talk to you.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot. Nick Cordy of OverTheCap.com joining us here at Railbird Central on a Monday morning. Glad to have him joining us. Glad to have you, the listener, join us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
A little bit delayed here, but I wanted to draw your attention to a profile on Ted Thompson from his youth by Michael Cohen of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I believe this was published last Friday after we went on air for Railbird Central, so that's why we didn't get to it the last episode. But it was really interesting. It was really well written, and it's interesting. It wasn't even so much, it was good reporting in that, you know, it was basically a collection of quotes in which Michael Cohen had to go out and collect all these and transcribe them and all that. And so, you know, it's not like this great piece of prose or anything like that. But I think it works, and it was really interesting. Basically, Michael Cohen went to Ted Thompson's hometown in Atlanta, Texas, not Atlanta, Georgia. There is an Atlanta, Texas, much smaller. But yeah, they went there to talk about Ted Thompson's time as youth, growing up, you know, up through his high school years. Didn't really go too much into college other than just to allude that, you know, he would go on to play at SMU and, you know, eventually the NFL, but really focused on, you know, growing up and what Ted Thompson was like back then. And, you know, there are a bunch of things I basically expected to find out or hear, like Ted Thompson, you know, his friends saying he never used to smoke or drink. And, you know, that didn't really surprise me whatsoever, just the Ted Thompson that we know now. But then there are things I was surprised to find out and hear, like his friends calling him, quote, the life of the party, unquote, and very gregarious. And if you know Ted Thompson today, that just doesn't compute. Ted Thompson being the life of the party. And even, you know, the people that they interviewed kind of like, you know, even didn't really recognize Ted today as compared to what he was back then, saying, you know, I don't know why he doesn't get more into the media aspect, in that he was, when he was younger, such a, you know, an affable person and more outgoing. And now he's so reserved and so conservative. I mean, you know, as far as, you know, his personality, at least, you know, almost to the extreme in terms of, you know, the least outgoing general manager in the NFL, and just the kind that, you know, doesn't want to go on record, doesn't want to hold press conferences, doesn't really enjoy that, you can tell. He doesn't want to give away secrets, and you understand that. And I think that's probably the biggest reason is, you know, people want to know why the Packers do that. He doesn't really want to get into that. He doesn't want it to become public information, you know, any sort of little advantage they can have or knowledge nugget or, you know, some sort of behind the scenes tidbit they know. They don't want to make that public. And I think that's why Ted is reticent to, you know, not be in front of the camera, in front of the microphone as much as he is. But yeah, we had learned other interesting things. His nickname back when he was young was Ted the Toe, because he also used to be the team's kicker and he would kick barefoot or just with a sock on. So there's all sorts of little things you found out about Ted Thompson, the Ted Thompson everybody sees at a press conference today, but doesn't really know, you know, his background really well. I mean, you know, he played in the NFL, but, you know, if you're, you know, like me, I mean, I'm 36 years old. I'm sure there's fans younger than me even who don't remember Ted Thompson, the NFL player. I don't remember him as a player, you know, never really saw him. I was too young, but it's interesting to learn these kind of things. So was interesting to find out. So I'll direct you to JS Online, jsonline.com, however you receive your information, but encourage you to go read that article. It definitely is very interesting and probably the most interesting thing that happened in the world of the Green Bay Packers over the course of this past weekend here. But if I could talk about, you know, one other subject today, and again, kind of delayed, it kind of flew under my radar last week, and I didn't really get a chance to address it because, you know, last week we were talking so much, I think, about the rookies of the Green Bay Packers, the draft picks, the undrafted free agents, the tryout players, and who the Packers were signing and all the transaction they were making. They made some roster cuts and signed a few more and all that. So kind of, you know, wasn't really on my radar last week. But the first Green Bay Packers player was revealed on the NFL Network's annual Top 100 list. So an exercise they do every year for, I don't know, this is about 6, 7 years now since they started doing this. But defensive lineman Mike Daniels came in at number 95. And yeah, that's not exactly high on the list, but it's his first appearance on the list in you know, his career. And it pretty much confirms what Packers fans have already known and realized, you know. Mike Daniels may not put up big sack numbers, but he's the most consistent player on the Packers defense, equally effective versus both the run and the pass. I should, you know, Clay Matthews probably deserves being on that list of most consistent as well. Mike Daniels, I would say, would give him a run for his money. And Julius Peppers probably in his prime would be, although he kind of disappears for stretches now in his older age. And definitely I would put Mike Daniels as the better player right now than Julius Peppers, just, you know, comparing their production and their effectiveness regardless of position. But, you know, these are the reasons the Packers gave Mike Daniels a 4-year, $41 million deal last season to keep him around and keep him in the green and gold and make sure he's around for years to come here, the next 4 years at least, and, you know, kind of being that building block the Packers are going to build their defense around with him and Matthews especially. And I just think it's a very deserving honor for Mike Daniels, who I think is really good and doesn't always get the credit. And, you know, it's the guys who put up the big sack numbers or the big interception numbers that always get the credit. But there are other ways to gauge a player's effectiveness that, you know, I think fly under the radar. And I can appreciate it, at least, even if other people can't. I think a lot of people can. But it's like the, you know, the casual fan who, you know, looks at the sack numbers and doesn't really get too excited about Mike Daniels. But I think you should. And you know what, just to, you know, to kind of talk about where he's been, where he's come from and where he is now. When Mike Daniels was younger, you know, when he was a rookie in the NFL or the Packers had first drafted him, even his, you know, second year early on in the NFL when he still wasn't a big time or was just starting to become a big time contributor. You know, I used to be scared about Mike Daniels versus the run, just because of his size. You know, he's a little over 6 feet. He's a little over 300 pounds. And, you know, that isn't big, you know, for an NFL defensive lineman, many of whom are, you know, 6'3" and over or 320 pounds and over. But Mike Daniels versus the run might actually be better than Mike Daniels versus the pass. It's amazing. I mean, it's the things he does with his body, like his violent hands, his hand usage, and more than anything, at the leverage. Of course, he's got that wrestling background, and we've heard a lot about that lately because of Kenny Clark, and the Packers drafted a player with a wrestling background who knows how to use leverage and things like that. And maybe that's, you know, what drew the Packers to Kenny Clark, knowing that, oh, Mike Daniels uses it so well. Let's get another guy in here that can as well. And, you know, I think that's one thing that Mike Daniels has really offered, and that he does so well and allows him to be good, you know, both versus the run and the pass. And although I will say this too, sometimes I don't know why the Packers use as heavy a rotation on the defensive line as they do. I guess I realize that players have to come out of the game sometimes, but I know I scratch my head when it's third and long and Daniels is out of the game on the sidelines. You know, he may not be an elite pass rusher, but I still think he was better than any other defensive lineman the Packers have at rushing the passer that's currently on the roster. And that's including B.J. Raji, who's no longer with the team. You know, if I could just put, you know, if the Packers are in, say, their nickel package and they have only two down defensive linemen out there, I would have Mike Daniels out there every time rushing the passer. He is better than Raji. He was better than LaTroy Guyon. He is better than Mike Pinnell, better than Dayton Jones, all at rushing the passer at least. And Julius Peppers was good when he was, you know, he's rushing there in the interior. Again, you know, at his advancing age, I don't think he's as good as he once was. Still good, just not great anymore. I'd have Mike Daniels out there every time. For my money, he's better. He's quicker. He uses that leverage. He knows, you know, he's a hustle guy. I love him out there. I'd like to see him be more of a three down player and coming out of the, I mean, he's probably out on the field more than any other Packers defensive lineman, but you know, I think if there's anybody can handle it basically at the peak of his career right now, you know, he could stand coming off the field the least of any Packers player. So, but anyway, congratulations are in order for Mike Daniels. It's a very well-deserved honor appearing on the NFL Network's top 100 list, which is voted upon by NFL players every year. So, and it's his first time making the list. We'll sit here and see what other Packers players make the top 100. I don't imagine there will be a ton of them. We'll kind of wait here to see where Clay Matthews falls on the list, where Aaron Rodgers does. I don't know where they'd have a guy like Jordy Nelson coming off the injury. He may make it. Randall Cobb may make it. So anyway, I don't know how many will make it, but we'll see where they fall on the list if and when they do. So excited to see that play out after the draft takes place, the NFL Network, basically. That's kind of their programming. I think every Wednesday it is after the NFL draft is over for how many weeks to kind of, you know, stem the tide until we get to the summer and training camps open. One way for them to ramp up the programming in the off season at the NFL Network. But anyway, that leads us into the next segment of the show.
The day ahead.
You know, there's not much going on this time of year when practices take place behind closed doors, and thankfully that's not going to happen for much longer. This is the last week, this week, of phase two of the program, and finally with phase three, they have OTAs, and they open the doors once in a while. We'll actually be able to see practice once in a while and know what's going on. But we kind of got to make it through one more week here without knowing a whole lot here, with no media, no reporters, no photographers, videographers, whatever, being allowed access to Packers practice. But, you know, just something interesting I saw this morning on social media, and I'll pass along. Fullback John Kuhn tweeted out a picture of himself this morning taking part in an honor flight that takes vets to Washington, D.C. to see the war memorials. And it's really cool, dude. It seems like a really cool experience, and it's neat to see John Kuhn taking part. So from that aspect, I mean, with, you know, not much going on here on a Monday, I'll suggest, you know, follow John Kuhn on Twitter for more than that, which is where I saw it and shared a picture. I'm not sure if he's going to share more throughout the day, but I just think that, you know, the honor flight's a really cool thing. I know they're really focusing on taking World War II vets that are still around, because they're not going to be around for long, and taking them to Washington, D.C. to see all the memorials. And, you know, after that, they're going to start focusing more on the Korean War. Things I've heard about the honor flight and things they do. But I guess this just kind of, you know, brings more attention to what we were talking about in the last episode of the show about Kuhn's future still kind of being up in the air, even, you know, days after that report by Greg Motzek of WTMJ that the Packers are moving on from Kuhn. But no other outlet has confirmed such a report, and neither Kuhn nor the Packers have commented on the situation. It's kind of weird. You really want to believe Greg Maczek. I respect him, but why is he the only person reporting this? It's kind of weird. I don't know if the just that neither, you know, side has made a commitment one way or another. Like the Packers have just continuing to wait and hold on and see if, I don't know. They got the, I believe it's one roster spot open. They filled 89 of 90 roster spots. I don't know what they're just leaving one spot open for flexibility, maybe. I don't know what their plans are there. Maybe they're just kind of holding on. For all I know, that's what they're doing. But again, that's speculation on my part, and I have no clue. Maybe John Kuhn could be considering retiring and hasn't made that public. I don't know. I don't think that's the case, but I'm trying to go through all the possibilities in my mind here and just figuring out, why is this one outlet reporting it and no others are? It just doesn't make sense, too much sense to me. But anyway, I just kind of relating that to what I saw on Twitter this morning and John Kuhn taking part in this. Anyway, if you want to follow along with John Kuhn on Twitter, you can. So I'd suggest that here on a Monday with little else going on in the world of the Green Bay Packers. Like I'm saying, they're in their last week of phase two here of the offseason program, what they call IPWs, individual position workouts. And basically, players are working specifically with their position coaches on technique and things like that. That's the focus of phase. They still do all the strength and conditioning too, but kind of adding this new element to the second phase. So next week we got OTAs. So Packers hit the practice field next week and we'll be learning out more and we'll anticipate that then. But that pretty much does it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you everybody so much for joining us. Thank you to Nick Cordy of OverTheCap.com for joining us today. My call to action is always as usual. If you've not done so already, please give us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So if you could do us a solid, just go to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV. It'll pop right up. Give us a five-star review, five-star rating and a review. Doesn't have to be long. Can make it brief, but we greatly appreciate it because it helps get word out about the show, helps people find it and learn what a great Packers podcast we think it is. So thanks, folks. Thanks to you who've already done that as well. And we'll see you on Wednesday. We'll talk to you later. On behalf of everybody at Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Caribou. And I'll leave you today with some songs from Psy Fidelity Records here, or her one song. Here we go. Simple Gift of Man by Brothers Past on Psy Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go Pack. Go.